We are holding on Bays, on the Bays, three lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah that Yitzias Shabbos Shtaim Shein Abu, Shneimu Shtaim Shein Abu B'chot, that you have altogether eight cases involving transferring something on Shabbos from one Rishus to another, involving the Oni and the Osher. We said we had different ways of breaking down what exactly are the Shtaim Shein Abu B'chot and the Shtaim Shein Abu B'chot, but altogether you have eight cases, of which in four of those cases somebody is Chayev, where they did the complete Malacha, the Akira and the Hanacha. For example, the Oni takes something, the Oni has something in his hand, reaches in from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus Yochid and puts it into the hand of the Baal HaBos is one, or takes something out of the hand of the Baal HaBos and brings it out to him is two, and so forth. You have and parallel cases for the Baal HaBos sticking out his hand and putting something in, or taking something and putting something in to the Oni's hand, or taking something out of it. One or the other of them did the complete Akira and Hanocha, and therefore he's Chayev Chatos or whatever the consequences are.
Right?
So you have altogether four of those, and then you have four more where they shared it between them, where, for example, the Oni stuck in his hand, and the Baal HaBos took something, the Baal HaBayis took something out of it, or the Baal HaBayis put something in it, and the Oni reached his hand back out, and the parallel. No, those are Jerabanim. Those are Jerabanim, because one of them did each one did half. One did the Akira, one did the Hanocha.
Derisa is when
one does
both.
Right, which we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara. So, Omelet of Masna Labaya. So the Masna asks Abaya, what do you mean that we're saying in the Mishnah, Shtaim Shein Abu, Shneimu Shtaim Shein Abu B'chot, that there were altogether only eight cases? What do you mean? Are you telling me there are only eight cases? When you get down to it, really, there are 12 situations over here, because we have to consider that, again, you have the four cases where one of them is chayev. For the moment, let's not count the fact that the other one is potter, as I was going to explain in a second why. But then you have all the cases, then you have the various cases where both of them are potter, because each of them did only half the malacha. Those should be counted separately, because you have, for example, let's say in the scenario where the Oni puts his hand in and the Baal HaBayis takes something out of it, we're saying in the Mishnah both of them are potter. But the fact of the matter is, we're saying both of them are potter, so therefore we should be saying, in other words, for that, so those count as two separate pturim, one for the Oni, one for the Baal HaBayis. Why are we just counting it as if it was one ptur across the both of them?
When each one does half.
So in other words, we should have this, so we have four cases.
The whole halacha is between both.
That's fine. The question is,
that's
your Masna's question. Why are we counting? We should be counting there are four chiyuvim, because you have the four cases where one or the other of them is chayav d'araisa, and then you should have eight pturim, because in each of the last cases of the Mishnah, in the third and fourth sections of the Mishnah, when you have the Oni does half the malacha and the Baal HaBos does half the malacha, each one of them is potter. So each of those should count as a separate pturim. So instead of saying Yitzias Shabbos Shtaim Shein Arba B'Fnim or Shtaim Shein Arba B'Chot, we should be saying Shtaim Shein Sheish B'Fnim or Shtaim Shein Sheish B'Chot. You have two, let's say, which are d'araisa, which resulting from them, you end up with four more that are chayav only the rabbanon. By breaking down.
If you count what is patur according to the person, depending on it, whether you count it according to the person or whether you count it according to
that's the question. We should assume that we count it according to the person, because what we're saying is that the Oni is potter and also the Baal HaBayis is potter. So we should count those as two separate turim. So therefore, if we do that, we come up with 12. So the Gemara says, "Bali Taimeich." Okay, you according to your own svara, shit today happened.
What? It should be that's four more. Now, why?
Yeah. So that, therefore, we have eight in the Mishnah already. Shtaim Shein Abu Shneimu Shtaim Shein Abu B'chot. You have two. Right. Exactly. We should have, in other words, that there should be for each one of them, we have two cases where he's chayev, where he did the complete malacha, and six cases where he's potter. Six cases where he's potter, namely. In terms of the fact the malacha itself was shared between the two of them, you have when we say potter, when we say shneim pturim, so we assume that was the question. The Mishnah just counted shneim pturim as one ptur. Each time it counted as one ptur. So let's break it down. Let's talk in terms of the Oni specifically. So we're saying like this: if the Oni reaches in and puts the thing into the Baal HaBayis' hand, or takes something out of the Baal HaBayis' hand, those are the two cases where he's chayav. But now let's consider all the cases where the Oni is potter. You have where the Oni reached in his hand and then the Balabais took something out of it. The case where the Oni reached in his hand and the Balabais put something into it. There he's also potter. And also the case where the Balabais, you have also the case where the Balabais reached out and the Oni took something from his hand. So that's yeah.
So 1 second. The Mishnah says twice potter and once Pturin. To say either Pturin for all.
No, that's not the question. Obviously in the first two parts of the Mishnah, obviously one of them is higher than the other one is potter. When we say in the third and fourth cases Shneim Pturim, we should be breaking that down. Instead of calling that in each of those cases, it's one Ptur. So therefore, we end up in the third part of the Mishnah, we have two Pturim, and in the fourth part, we also have two Pturim, and those are all together are Shehein Arba, and therefore we have four Pturim. We should really be breaking it down and call those eight Pturim. Because for each one of them, you have cases where he's potter because he only did the Akira, and cases where he's potter because he only did the Hanoch. Yeah, that's the question.
So that shows that he goes by the
Hanoch. No, but that's the question. Why indeed are we not? Why are we indeed not saying that we should count it, that each one of them is, that there are more cases where each of them is potter, and therefore we should be counting eight.
Almost every lesson we learned in the Gemara, says that the only... teaches you only add additional ones, you can't learn one from another one. But usually you learn from one another.
That Tosfos had said, the reason why the Mishnah had to delineate all the cases for us is because you can't learn one from the other, because Hatzal being a Malacha Grua. But now,
how about these additional ones that ask
now? Well, that's the question. And it's just a matter of numbering. Given that the Mishnah had told us, Shtayim Shein Arba Chos, meaning that you have four, which then break down into eight. Why are we saying it breaks down into eight? We should be saying it breaks down into 12. So the Gemara says, "Vali time shift that he have." New, if you're going to go in that way, you should count 16 actually, because now let's talk in the first two parts of the Mishnah, the case where the Oni is chayev, the two cases where the Oni is chayev, and the two cases where the Balabais is chayev. So in the two cases where the Oni is chayev, we said the Balabais is potter. In the two cases where the Balabais is chayev, the Oni is potter. So altogether, you have 16 if you break down the chiyuvim and pturim. Omalei, so Abai says, so the Masna says, okay, holy Kasha, that's not the fact that we say that we should be saying 16, I don't have a problem with that. Because Bishlema Bavadiresha, because I can understand in the first part of the Mishnah, Potter Umutter Leikatani.
Which case?
The first two cases. The first two cases where the Oni is Chayev and where the Balabais is Chayev and the other one is Potter, so fine. We can say the Mishnah is not numbering those among the cases because Potter Umutter Leikatani. Because we're not interested in listing the cases where not only somebody is Potter, but he's actually Mutter to do it. In the first cases of our Mishnah, and let's say, for example, the case where the Oni reaches in his hand and puts something into the Balabais' hand. The Balabais is just standing there. He's not actually doing any Iser, which means it would even be mutter for him to stand there with something in his hand and the Oni to take it out. We'll talk about that in a second. We'll get back to that point in one second. Leaving aside for the moment the matter of Lifnei Iver. Let's talk strictly from the point of view of Hilchos Shabbos. In fact, Tosfos Yishonim on the side of here says as much that we're just dealing with Hilchos Shabbos over here. We're not focusing for the moment on Lifnei Iver. So forget about Lifnei Iver for a second. Just from the point of view of Hilchos Shabbos, if the Balabais is standing there with something in his hand, and all of a sudden the Oni reaches in through the window and takes it, the Balabais hasn't done anything wrong. So not only would it be potter, as in he shouldn't have done it, and he's chayev de rabbanon, but even it would be mutter for him to do that. So fine, you can say then the potter or mutters were not counting. So therefore that reduces us by four. So when we say in the first case in the Mishnah, when we have two cases where the Oni is chayev, one for putting into the Balabais' hand, one for taking out of the Balabais' hand, and the Balabais is just standing there in either case, then fine, you could say that we're counting only the fact that you have two cases where the Oni is Chayev. We're not counting the fact that in both those cases the Balabais is Kotzer, because in both those cases it's Kotzer or Mutter.
With knowledge and kavana that the Oni is going to take it out.
So now we come to what Tosfos is discussing about the matter, isn't there a matter of Lifnei Iver? That after all, you're not allowed to abet another yid in doing an Aveira.
Right.
So Tosfos discusses that Lifnei Iver literally means in front of a blind man, don't put a stumbling block. So what we understand, it doesn't mean literally not to put a rock in front of somebody blind when he's walking. It means, for example, it means, among other things, don't give a person bad advice, but it also includes don't abet a person doing an Aveira. So, So Tosfos mentioned, so Tosfos discusses over here that it may be, we could be talking about over here about a goy, and not only now it's true, we're going to learn later in the perek, that it's not so simple to give a goy something before Shabbos, or you're on Shabbos rather, and have him carry it out of your chotzer, because you do have the matter, you do have the matter of amir al-akum, you do have the matter, you're not allowed to tell a goy to do malacha. However,
that's for yourself.
The Tosfos answers, the Tosfos says, let's say, for example, we're talking about over here, not only it's a goy, but let's say, for example, the object itself belongs to the goy as well. So then there's no problem. Then there's no problem him taking it out of your hand, or him putting it into your hand, because it's not even yours, and he's a goy, and therefore there's no matter of the neighbor. Again, Tosfos Yeshanim just says you don't even need all that. You could just say that we're focusing from the point of view of Hilchos Shabbos. We're not focusing from the point of view of the neighbor. Okay. So anyway, so the question is, so again, in the Reisha, in the first two cases of Mishnah, when we have one or the other of them is going to be Potter and even Mutter, so fine. The Mishnah is not list, the Mishnah is not enumerating those when it says Stein Shainah, but we can understand why it's leaving those out. Because the Mishnah is interested in focusing on the cases of what you're not allowed to do. El above the Sefer, the Potter Aval also Kasha, but we still have a Kasha from the Sefer, from the third and fourth cases. Again, the fact of the matter is, in the third and fourth cases, the Oni, for example, when he's reaching in, the Balabais takes something out of his hand, in which case we're saying the Potter, because one did Akira and one did Hanocha. The fact is, neither one was allowed to do what they did. The Oni wasn't allowed to reach in, and the Balabais wasn't allowed to take out of his hand. So shouldn't we count those as two separate things? One is potter, even though he did something wrong, and the other one is potter, even though he did something wrong.
You're saying he's not allowed to reach in.
Yeah.
But you said that in order to be formal alpha, you need a clear and a
fair. There's Daraisa and there's Darabonin. Daraisa,
you're talking
Darabonin, of course. So he did something wrong. Potter, Aval also. He did something wrong. He is potter from Chatos or Skiller or Kares or what have you, but it is also Midrabanan for him to do it. So in that case, we should be listing out there are six possible such cases for each one of them. Six for the Oni, six for the Balabais, where he's doing something.
There's two for the outside and two for the...
Well, so you have, again, let's break down in the case of the Oni. You have one where he reaches in and the Balabais takes from him. Two where he reaches in and the Balabais gives him something. And three where the Balabais reaches out and the Oni takes from him. Where the reaches out and the Oni takes from him.
That's three.
And actually you have also the fourth one also where the Balabais sticks out his hand and the Oni puts something into it. Yeah, so that's four. And then four corresponding ones for the Balabais. So therefore that's eight. And then you have four more. The cases in the first part of the Mishnah with two where the Oni is chayev, two where the Balabais is chayev. So altogether you end up with 12. So why is the Mishnah saying Shtayim Shein Arba B'Fneim or Shtayim Shein Arba B'Chutz, implying that altogether we only have 8 cases, when in fact, if we break it down, we really have 12 cases? So first of all, before the Gemara gets to the answer, the Gemara interjects, one second, Mi'ikah B'Kula Shabbos Potter or Mutter. What do you mean that in these cases in the Mishnah, in the first and second case, you would say that the Oni or the Balabais, as the case may be, is Potter or Mutter? There's no such thing. Didn't Shmuel say a rule? Kol Ptura de Shabbos Potter Aval Oser. Anywhere in Masechta Shabbos or anywhere in Hilchos Shabbos, where we say that something is Potter, it usually means Potter Aval Oser, meaning that's also Drabanan, Bar Mehani Tlas the Potter or Mutter, with the exception of the following three, which are Potter and actually Mutter. Number one, Seidas Tzvi. The first one, actually, of the three, only one of them is in a Mishnah in Or Masechta. The other two are actually in Mishnayos and Masechta Eidos. But the first one, Seidas Tzvi, is a case that we're going to have later on, in the Kufs, where the end of the 13th Perek. You're going to have a case over there where, now we know one of the Malachas of Shabbos is Tzod, trapping animals. So suppose, what?
I'm talking about Yom Tov.
We're talking about Shabbos. Yom Tov is going to be the Masechta Beitzah. So suppose you have a scenario. Suppose you have an animal. Let's say the example over there in the Mishnah is a deer inside a house. Now, if somebody sits in front of the door and thereby is blocking the deer from going out, then he's doing the Malacha of Tzad. So he's trapping the animal inside. Now what happens, let's say, so that was Reuben sat down there. Now let's say Shimon sits down next to Reuben. Shimon's not doing a Malacha, obviously, because the animal's already trapped. Now what happens if Reuven gets up and leaves and Shimon is still sitting there? Is he allowed to stay sitting there? The answer is yes. because the animal was already trapped by Reuben. Reuben is the one who committed the malacha. Shimon is now not only potter if he sits there, but he's mutter. He's allowed to continue sitting there until Shabbos is over.
And blocking the door?
Blocking the door, yeah. So once Reuben blocked the door, the fact that Shimon is also blocking the door doesn't matter because he did it only after Reuben completely blocked the door. No, if you have that Reuben only halfway blocked the door and Shimon then comes, yeah. But we're talking about if Reuben completely blocked the door and then Shimon got up and sat next to him and then Reuben got up and left. Shimon is actually allowed, not only Potter, but Mutter, to sit there until Shabbos is over, and then, hey, he's got a deer. He's got a new pet deer.
He's also doing the same.
Because he's not, because the malacha was already done by the time he came there.
So he's repeating it.
No, he's not repeating it. The animal's already inside.
Yeah,
the animal's already inside.
Continuing
is not a malacha. In fact, the Mishnah says over there, imagine a person closes the door of his house, and then after he closes it, he discovers that, hey, there was a deer inside the house. He doesn't have to open up the door. Once he closed it,
But that's one person you're talking
about. No, same thing. Same thing. So that's
two people. Let's say the animal wants to go out once, then Reuven blocks the door, he's higher. Then he goes back in, and
doesn't matter. The animal is already considered trapped at that point. Now, the house or the room has to be a certain size for that purpose. Otherwise, if it's large enough that the animal could still run around in, then yeah, it's not fully considered trapped. So we're talking about, let's say it's a small room. The animal is trapped in that room once Reuven sits down there.
The part that if he would get up, they could run out, and that which proves that he is doing something.
But that's because the thing was already done by the time he got there. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, Vitzedas Nachash. The second one actually is a case in the Sefer Edius, which is that another thing involving Tzeda, trapping a snake, which is going to bite, which is going to bite a person. Now, obviously, Tosfos points out, we're not talking about a matter of pikuach nefesh. If it's pikuach nefesh, obviously, then Shmuel is no chiddush of what Shmuel is saying, that it's potter or mutter. What we mean is, even if it's not a snake that it's going to bite a person and kill him, it's going to cause him some pain. Nevertheless, normally you're not allowed to trap it on Shabbos, but in the case of a deer, if you have no other way to get away from it, not a deer, sorry, a snake, a nachash, then you have no other way to get away from it, then you're allowed to trap it.
You're not allowed to kill it.
You're not allowed. No, that would be a different. No, that would be a different malacha. But
No.
So you're not allowed to kill it, but you are allowed to trap it. And the reason is because the Chachamim allowed it. Now you have to realize like this. There's an important topic which we'll discuss a little bit now. We'll discuss it at various places in the Masechta called malacha she'enet tzricha legufa. Now, there's actually a machloekas Rishonim what exactly malacha shein tzricha legufa is, but first of all, you have a machloekas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon whether such a thing is chayav on Shabbos or not. Rabbi Yehuda holds it is, Rabbi Shimon holds it's not. You have a machloekas Rishonim who the halacha is, like the Rambam holds like Rabbi Yehuda, everybody else holds like Rabbi Shimon. But that's something else. That's malacha, that's Dava Shein Miskavin. Dava Shein Miskavin we'll deal with later. Right now, we're dealing with malacha shein tzricha legufa. Which is malacha shein. So there's a few different definitions. Rashi and Tosfos later in the Masechta have argue what exactly malacha shein tzricha legufa is. Other Rishonim also have different understandings of it. Is it that a malacha? So like this, we have each of the 39 malachas. There was a particular reason why they did it in the Mishkan. And some of them are not necessarily the more obvious ones. Let's say, for example, you had the malacha of mechabed. You had the malacha of putting out a fire in the Mishkan. Now, it wasn't just they put out the fire because they didn't need it anymore. They put out the reason why they put out fires as one of the 39 malachas in the Mishkan is because they were making charcoal in order to be able to melt metal. They had to work with gold, silver, and copper, so they needed a very hot fire. And to do that, you need charcoal. So they'd be burning wood or whatever kind of fuel and then putting it out in order to have charcoal. So therefore, that is the goof, that is the purpose for which the malacha of Kibui is done. So now you can have a few possible cases. You have an argument between Rashi and Tosfos and other Rishonim, what exactly? Let's say, for example, you're putting out a flame, not because you need the charcoal, but let's say, for example, we're going to learn in the second parak, because you want to save the oil, you want to save the wick. You don't need the light anymore. You're putting it out so that later on you'll have the wick or the oil to light another time. That's an example of malacha shenis tzuricha legufa. So what is the idea? Because you're not doing it for the same purpose as in the Mishkan, is it because you're doing it because you're only doing it because of the circumstances require it? You would have preferred, actually, in that case, you would have preferred in that case the candle shouldn't have been lit in the first place, and then you wouldn't have to be putting it out now. That's Rashi's definition of malacha shenis tzuricha legufa. Some other Rishonim give a slightly different explanation. That depends whether you're doing it for a constructive purpose or not, basically. Anyway, the point is, there is this concept of malacha she'enet tzricha legufa, a malacha that you're doing not for the purpose that it was being done in the Mishkan, and you're not necessarily doing it, you're either just that's all, you're not doing it for the purpose in the Mishkan, and that's enough to make it considered malacha she'enet tzricha legufa, or again, like Rashi says, that you're doing it only out of duress, basically. Another example of it, let's say, would be another example we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, is, let's say, for example, there's a dead body in a house. You're taking it out on Shabbos. Now, what did they do? The Malacha of Haitzah, in the Malacha of Haitzah in the Mishkan, was not just to get something out of your house, it was to bring it to where it was needed. You're bringing gold and silver and whatever to the various people who need it and are working on it. So the Malacha of Haitzah is for the purpose because you need this item someplace else. In the case of the mess, you don't need it someplace else. You just want it out of your house.
Mm-hmm. And it's somewhere else in the Mishkan, just for the Mishkan, though.
That's what we're talking about. We learn the malachas of Shabbos from the malachas of the Mishkan. And each malacha in the Mishkan, when they did it, it had a particular purpose. And therefore, so what we're saying is, so let's say, for example, carrying out a mess is not the same purpose of Haidah. And according to Rashi, and according to other Rishonim, on top of that, it's a situation. You're not doing it because you want to. You're doing it because you have no choice. You would have preferred that the guy shouldn't be dead in the first place, or at least that he shouldn't be in the house, and that you shouldn't have to carry him out.
And therefore, it's
malacha she'enet tzricha legufa.
And therefore,
it's not really a tolda. But a tolda would be a variation of a malacha that you're doing as something that comes out of malacha, but you're doing it basically for the same purpose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So malacha she'enet tzricha legufa, what's the status?
So you have machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, whether it's allowed or not. Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's osur, that's the same exact issur Shabbos. There's kares and skila and chatos involved, just like if he did it legufa. And Rabbi Shimon disagrees. So the halacha according to the Rambam is like Rabbi Yehuda. According to most other Rishonim, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Yeah. So now, in this case, of Tzedas Nachash is an example of malacha she'enet tzricha legufa. The reason why they trapped animals in the Mishkan is to use the actual animals. They trapped the rams over there in order to make the Oris Elam Adamim and Oris Tchoshim. So that was the purpose for which they trapped them, in order to shech them and use their skin. Over here, you're not trapping the nachash in order to use anything from it. You're trapping it in order to keep it away from you. So that's malacha she'enet tzricha legufa.
If you're trapping it to use its skin,
then it would be a malacha d'oraisa. Then it would be a malacha d'oraisa, no question about it. The question is it a malacha d'oraisa in this case? Now, Shmuel over here holds like Reb Shimon, who says that it's mutter, because since it's normally malacha she'enet tzricha legufa would in fact be osur, but in this case, because there's tzar involved, the chachamim allow it. Now that only works according to Reb Shimon. That only works according to Reb Shimon. And in fact, Tosfos points out later in the Masechta, we learn that Shmuel actually holds like Reb Yehuda as far as this matter of malacha she'enet tzricha legufa. So why are we here? He's saying like Reb Shimon. So Tosfos says one thing is that maybe Shmuel is not giving a list over here saying that I agree it's potter umotur. I would in fact hold that it's osur because I hold like Reb Yehuda. But according to Reb Shimon, this would be one of the cases where potter umotur. Again, Tosfos and most other Rishonim do hold like Reb Shimon in general. The Rambam does not. Okay. Anyway.
The Rambam holds
that malacha she'enet tzricha legufa is also d'oraisa like Rabbi Yehuda.
And that's the halacha?
No, well, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is the halacha in general of Rabbi Shimon. But nevertheless, I mean, it's not really the truth is it's not really negay as a practical matter of halacha for us nowadays so much, because either way, it's also, either it's also d'oraisa or it's also d'rabbanan. A chatos we don't have nowadays, so yeah. So that's Tzedas Nachash. And the third one, Umefis Mursa. The third one is opening up a boil or a sore or whatever. You have a sore, a boil or whatever on the body full of pus and an infected area. So you open it up. Now, there's two possible reasons why a person might open it up on Shabbos or any time. One is that he wants to keep it open because he wants not only the pus that's there now to get out, but he wants also that air should be able to get into it and then continue healing it. That would be also on Shabbos. That would be also on Shabbos, even if there's pain. Again, unless it's pikuach nefesh, in which case there's nothing to talk about. No, it's not. So to open up an infected area where there's pus, not even a pus area on the body, it's not even a pikuach nefesh. Depends where it is, but no, if it's just on the skin or something, then no, it's not going to go on that.
That doesn't mean if it's on the skin, it's on pikuach nefesh.
If
it's significant, you have to open it.
Then that depends how significant it is. If we're talking about a small thing. We're talking about a small thing where a person got a person cut themselves a little bit while they were peeling vegetables or whatever, and then got infected. Come on.
How does it come to the Mishkan?
Because, so you have a machlokas between the Rambam and the Raivad, what exactly the malacha involved in. The Rambam holds that it's not of a patish. You're finishing off something, you're making it, so to speak, like ready for use. There is a malacha in the Mishkan, not of a patish. It's the 38th on the list, where you're doing like a last hammer blow on something to make it ready to use. That in and of itself is a malacha, even if otherwise it wouldn't have been. By the way, the Yerushalmi mentions on this. I mentioned yesterday the idea that the Yerushalmi says that every av malacha has 39 shoulders. So the Yerushalmi says anything that's also on Shabbat and you can't figure out what of it belongs to, it goes under Makor Pasuk. Anyway, so the Rambam understands it to be Makor Pasuk. So if you're making it ready, you're making it like now it's ready to be healed. The Raivad disagrees and says that it would be a malacha of Boina. Boina means building, and of course they built in the Mishkan. In terms of Hilchos Shabbos, in terms of the Malachas, Boina includes any time that you're making a hole in a structure, or in this case in the body or whatever, for things to go out and things to go in. An example that it gives later on in the Sefer is, let's say you have a chicken coop and you make a hole in it for the bad air, the stale air, to go out and fresh air to come in. So that would be a malacha of Shabbos. If you're only making a hole for one direction, only for things to go out, or only for things to go in, then it's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. So again, then you have Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon. So again, according to Rabbi Shimon, which according to most Rishonim is the halacha, then we would say that this is also. I stopped in the middle over there. So if you're making a hole in order to go both directions, to get out pus and to get in air, then it would be an actual malacha. Then it would be also on top. But if you're doing it, let's say you're making only one hole. No, it's still only one hole.
No,
but let's say
it's a
bi-directional hole, right? But if you're making it only in order to get out the pus, and you don't care if right afterward the hole closes up, then that's the malacha shein tzricha legufa, and Rav Shimon would hold, and Shmuel is telling us, that's another example of potter umutter. Again, because of this tzar, the Chachamim weren't gozer on it. Okay, so therefore, so again, Shmuel is saying, therefore, that there's only three cases in Hilchos Shabbos where we say potter and it means mutter as well. Which are what we just said. So the case of the deer in the house, the case of the case of trapping the snake, and the case of opening up a boil to get the pus out. Actually, Tosfos points out you have a couple of other cases where we have potter in our Masechta and mutter, but either those are not in Mishnayos, or some of them are not in Mishnayos. Some of them there's various other reasons why not to list them. In any case. The major reason is because the three that we mentioned over here are in Mishnayos. Also, another one that we list is maybe not according to everybody. All right, anyway. So the question is again that only in those three cases do we say potter means potter or mutter. Therefore, our Mishnah is not one of those three. So it should be that potter over here means osir. What are you telling me? Going back to our discussion before, that when the oni and the balabayas are when the oni is putting something in through the window and putting it into the hands of the balabayas, we said the balabayas is potter and potter means mutter. Why is he mutter? It's not one of the things on Shmuel's list. The answer is, no, that's the question. Well, Shmuel can't argue with the Mishnah. But the answer is, ki itzrich le Shmuel p'turi d'ka'obed ma'ise. The answer is, Shmuel's chiddush is only when you're actually doing something. Then he's saying, there were three cases in Hilchos Shabbos when it says you're potter for doing something and means you're actually mutter to do it. P'turi d'loy ka'obed ma'ise is a tshuva. Cases where a person is potter when he didn't actually do something, there can be many cases. But yeah, in our Mishnah, the balabais is just standing there. He's not doing anything. He's standing there and the oni drops something into his hand, or he's standing there and the oni takes something out of his hand or whatever. He's just standing there passively. Sure, that's not included in Shmuel's rule because he's not doing anything.
So no contradiction.
So Mekol Mokom Tauchit Tzrei Havyan. So now getting back to the question of Ramasna, don't we have 12 cases? Again, because we broke it down, you have four cases One of them is Chayev and the other one is Potter. Fine, that's Potter or Mutter, so we don't count that. But we have eight cases total. We have four cases involving, we have four cases, again, where both of them are Potter, but that should mean, in other words, we have to break it down. We have the Balabayas is Potter and the Oni is Potter in each of those four cases, so therefore that comes out to eight. So why doesn't it say Shtayim Shein Shesh? The answer is truly the osibul de chiyuv chakas kachoshes. The answer is the Mishnah is only listing ones where he's potter, but he could conceivably have come to a chiyuv chakas. The loy osibul de chiyuv chakas loy kachoshes. The Mishnah is not listing the ones. The Mishnah is not enumerating rather the ones where if where there's no possibility of a chiyuv chakas. Now what is that? One second. No. We're talking right. In other words, where there could have been a malacha daraisa. So what does that mean? Rashi explains. When you're talking about when the person is doing Akira, conceivably he could then continue and do the Anocha. And if he did, he'd be chayav on a Daraisa level. So therefore, now let's break it down. In other words, so let's say, for example, in the cases involving the Oni sticking his hand in, so again, we said there's two cases where both he and the Balabayas are potter, because each one only did half the malacha. You have the case where the Oni sticks in his hand and the Balabayas takes something out of it, or where the Balabayas puts something into it. One second. So what we're saying is, in other words, that we're only counting the Akira, Rashi says. We're not counting the Hanocha, the fact that, in other words, let's say, in the case where the Oni stuck in his hand and the Balabayas took something out of it, meaning the Oni did the Akira, the Balabayas did the Hanocha, we're not counting among the eight the fact that the Balabayas is potter for having done the Hanocha. Because there's no way that he could have done that Hanocha, there's no way that he could have ever been Chayav Chatas, because the Akira was already done by the time he got to it. Therefore, we're only counting the Ptur of the Oni. Sorry, and I'm sorry, we're disturbing you in there. We're only counting the Akira of the Oni, because if he were to continue and drop it into the hands of the Balabayas, then he would actually be Chayav Daraisa. So we're only counting his Akira, we're not counting the Balabayas as Hanoch, and vice versa in all the other cases. So that reduces them by four. That's a coin of Rashi. There are other Rishonim actually who learn the other way around. That answers the question. In other words, because let's say taking that as one example, let's say, so you have, when we say, we said in the Mishnah both of them are potter, but in terms of counting toward the eight, we only count the Oni's Ptur in that case. We do not count the Balabayas' Ptur, because not only he is also to have done it, but there's no way that by doing a Hanocha after the Oni Nasira, that he could have potentially been Machal Shabbos on a Daraisa level.
And the same thing in reverse,
and therefore, so as we go through all the cases, so that reduces you by four. So that's Rashi's first explanation. You're only counting the Akiras. Then Rashi brings from his Rebbeim that what it means is we're counting the cases when we count towards the eight. We're counting only the cases where somebody sticks his hand inward. So whether he has something in his hand or whether or not. So for example, you have, let's say, so again, in Rashi's first example, we would be counting the case where the Oni sticks in his hand holding something, but not the case where the Oni sticks in his hand without anything in it, because he didn't do an Akira. According to Rashi's Rebbeim, and Tosfos says something similar, that what it means is the one who sticks his hand in, we're counting that. So we are counting towards the eight, the case, let's say, where the Oni stuck in his hand, whether he had something in it or not, even though in the case where he had nothing in his hand, there was no Akira. But we're counting that. We're counting that because that's the beginning of the Maaseh. So therefore, if we think of the total number of times where somebody is sticking his hand from one Rishustan to another, we have four of them. Plus, we have, again, four where somebody is Chayev, and you have four more where somebody is Potter. So in other words, in the case, so let's say, with the Oni outside, so one case is he sticks in his hand holding something, and the Balabayas takes it from him. That we count towards the eight. We also count the case where the Oni sticks in his hand empty, and the Balabayas puts something, and then the Oni withdraws his hand. We also count that. Now, according to Rashi's first explanation, we wouldn't count that because he only did the Hanocha. The Balabayas did the Akira. According to Rashi's Rebbeim, we would count it because he started the whole thing by sticking his hand in. And therefore, you have two like that, two more where the Balabayas sticks out his hand, one where it's empty, one where it's full, and therefore you wind up with four Pturim along with the four Chiyuvim that we had previously in the Mishnah.
Well, it doesn't sound like putting in empty hands until the window drops. You didn't do anything.
No, but you start, according to Rashi's Rebbeim, and according to Tosfos, what it is you
started the process. It's true. Obviously, if he hadn't put anything in there, then he wouldn't have done any malacha. But the fact that he started the process, and then he continued the process, so therefore that can be counted as one of the peturim that was saying you did something actively, and yet you potter. Then there's a third explanation. Some of the other Rishonim, the Rashba, and others learn the other way. The Ramban learn the other way around. That when we count the Hanochos, we don't count the Akiris. Exactly the opposite of Rashi's first explanation. On the ground that an Akira without a Hanocha, is meaningless. A Hanocha, after all, had there been an Akira before the Hanocha, that Hanocha would make him Chayav Chatos. Therefore, it's more logical to count the Hanocha.
Because
it completes the Malacha, right?
Yeah, the only thing is that it's impossible to do one without the other one.
Well, that's true, but in this case, you can't, because one does one and one does the other.
That's the point. You have to complete it with the Anacha.
Right.
The Anacha part.
So the Anacha is the most important.
So according to that last opinion, right, whereas according to Rashi's own opinion, the Akira is the most important because the Akira could conceivably result in Hanukkah, and then again, according to the explanation Rashi brings from the Zerbeim, which Tosfos brings a similar explanation, and the Rosh says that actually they amount to the same thing, is that we're counting any case where a person sticks his hand from one Rishus into another. That's the beginning of the process.
Regardless if there is something or
not. Right. Okay.
No.
So that's it. So now we got down to our eight. You have four cases where one or the other of them is chayev chatos, and you have four more cases which we're counting where somebody is potter, but there are other the other person is also potter in those cases, but we're not counting them. So either we're counting only the akiras, or we're counting only the hanochas, or we're counting only the sticking of the hand in
around. And if we were counting the one that we could possibly be healed.
That's what we're saying.
Then we should only have either according to one who started the Akira or the other one with the Hanocha.
That's the point. So we have four cases of Akira and four cases of Akira, which are potter because one did the Akira and the other did the Hanocha. And then we have four cases where somebody's Chayev because he did the Akira and the Hanocha. So there's our eight. No, because that's what we're saying. If we say that we count the Akiras, for example, then you have you can have where the Oni did an Akira and a Hanocha, where there is Chayev. You can have a case where the Oni did the Akira and the Balabais did the Hanocha, and you can have and vice versa. You can have the case where the Oni did the Akira outside and the Balabais did the Hanocha. Yeah.
So you have
four possible cases where one or the other of them is chayev, and then you have four more cases where both of them are potter, but we're only counting for each one of those cases the fact that one of them is potter, the one who did the akira, or the one who did the hanocha, or the one who stuck his hand out, according to the three explanations.
The last two cases, we're not going to look at if he's chayev.
According to Rashi, we are. We're going to see you did an Akira. Could you conceivably have done the Hanocha as well? Then you'd be Chayev. So then we have to count it.
So basically, we're saying that the four cases, there's two cases that are the Raisa, right?
Right.
And two cases are the Rabbanan.
Right. So what we're doing is we're only counting in those Dirabbanans, we're only counting a certain kind of Issur Dirabbanan. We're only counting the Akira, so we're only counting the Hanocha, so we're only counting the sticking the hand in. Right. Okay.
So that's it.
So we've established that we have four and four, and therefore the number in the Mishnah was correct. Okay. So now the question is, what do you mean Shnei and Peturim? What do you mean both of them are potter? What do you mean? The fact is between the two of them a Malacha was done. So either you should say that maybe one or the other of them should after all be chayav achata, or some of the Rishonim learn that maybe the Gemara's question is asking them, not Rishonim, actually, the Pnei Yeshua, talk to the Pnei Yeshua, and they should jointly bring the chata. The answer is no.
Now we're reversing the thing. We're saying it goes according to the Malacha.
That's what we want to figure out. The answer is, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer, may am ha'oretz ba'asoysa. No, because the Pasuk says, when does a person bring a chatas? When a person from the people of the land, when that nefesh does an avera, ha'oysa es kula, v'la'oysa es mitzvah. So only when the person does the entire Malacha, not when he does half of it. Therefore, Yochid also is a chayev. If a Yochid does malacha by himself and he's chayev, Shnayim also is a pterim. But if two people jointly do a malacha, then they're potter. With the exception, we'll learn later on in the Masechta. sechta if neither one could have done it by himself, and the two of them did it together. Let's say it was a very, heavy object, and the two of them carried it together, then they would be chayav.
Is that a general
one? Yeah.
One person has to carry the formula.
Mm-hmm. So it applies not only to malacha, it applies to other things as well. Nami, we said also Amr Abkhiba, Gamda Nizrukum Api Khavura, there was thrown from the mouth of the Khavura, meaning the Khavura, meaning the Chachamim, who were saying the Mesmeder, like all unanimously said at the same time, the Amru, and they said Ba'asoisa, we learn from that topic, Ba'asoisa, Yochad Shasta Chayev, one person does Malacha by himself, he's Chayev, Shnaim Shasta Abturin, but if two people jointly do it, then they are Potter.
The whole Mesmeder
said it unanimously, because they all knew the halacha, and that was the answer. As soon as the question was posed, why are they not chayiv? And why, for example, according to the Pnei Yeshua, should we not say that the two of them have to bring a korban jointly because it doesn't, because ba'asoisa? Okay. By the way, I mean, this that we're mentioning, that if neither one can do it by himself, then each one is chayiv, each one is considered to have carried the whole thing. The Rebbe used to talk about that, for example, in connection with, let's say, you have the Chalukah Shas. On the last page of Tanya, it says over there that we should learn the whole Shas every year. Your average person can't learn the whole Shas in a whole year, so what do? We split it up, each person takes a Masechta, and since nobody could have done it by themselves, therefore it's considered as though everybody did it. Okay.
Because
the same way as the Tochas Shabbos, if you have a heavy beam, for example, and neither one can carry it by himself, only the two people together can carry it, then we say both of them are chayav. So by the same token, when it comes to a heavy thing like that, like learning all of Shas in a year, then okay. Rav Meirev. Okay, Rav asked Rebbe a question as follows. If a person was laden with food and drink by somebody else. Now, it doesn't have to be food and drink. Rashi points out that, but those are the kind of things that usually people handle on Shabbos. So let's say, for example, Reuben takes a bunch of food and drink and loads it up onto Shimon, and Shimon walks outside with it, carrying it on Shabbos. Mahu, what is it in? Is Shimon chayev or not? The question is, do we say that starting to move his body, that he starts moving his legs and walking, is considered like doing akira of the objects that he's carrying, and therefore he'd be chayev, or maybe not. Maybe you would say that only akira would be picking up the actual objects, and he didn't pick up the actual objects because they were put on him by somebody else.
Someone took a
tray of food, let's say, and put it into Shimon's hands, and then Shimon walks out carrying it. So is Shimon chayev or not? On the one hand, he didn't do akira of the actual food because he was holding it in his hands, but he did akira of his body. He started walking.
That question just done. He has to do both. Akira.
We know that that's the question. Is this that he's moving considered an akira? There's no question. When he gets to a destination, he's going to be putting it down. He's doing hanocha. Is the fact that he started walking now, is that considered an akira? Or is akira only if he actually picks up the object? And in this case, he didn't pick it up because somebody put it on him. Doesn't matter. One second. So Rebbe answers him, Shimon would in fact be chayev. The Eina Joma LeYodim. It's not like the case of our Mishnah with the hand, where the hand of the Oni is sticking in through the window, or the hand of the Balabas is sticking out of it. My timer, what's the reason? Gufay Nayach Yodim LeNayach. Because the difference is, his body is resting on the ground. So therefore, when he starts moving his body, then it's considered an akira. There was something on the ground, his body. He's holding the tray in his hand.
One second.
The difference is his hand, when it's in a different rishus, is not resting on the ground. Of course, it's attached to his body, but his body itself is in a different rishus. So you can't say that his hand is considered to be, his hand is definitely not in the same rishus as his body, because his body's in rishus arabim in the case of the oni, let's say, and his hand is in rishus ayachid. So what we're saying is his hand, therefore, and his hand is not resting on the ground. Therefore, it can't be considered that moving his hand should be considered an akira. So therefore, again, let's say in the case of our Mishnah, you have, let's say, the oni stuck in his hand. You said from the outside, it through the window. The Balabais, you said, put something in his hand, and the oni withdraws it. If you were to say that his hand is considered to be, if you were to say that his hand is on the ground, then he would, in fact, be chayav. He did the akira, and he did the anocha. He did the akira from inside, and he did the anocha outside. But because And we're saying that his hand is not nayach, it's not resting on the ground, so it's not considered to be, so therefore when he moves his hand out, he didn't do akira. The Baal HaBayis is the one who did akira by putting it in his hand. But his body as a whole is resting on the ground. So when Reuven puts the tray into Shimon's hands and Shimon starts walking, Shimon is considered to be the one who did the akira. Now that's all according to the girsa that we have in front of us. Rashi brings a different girsa which he doesn't like, which is Yodei Bosei Gufa Grira, that his hand follows his body. It says that his hand follows his body, and therefore when he does akira of his body, then he's automatically doing akira of his hand. Rashi says I don't like that. Tosfos and a number of other Meforshim justify that and say that does belong in the Gemara after all, and that is a reason that the Gemara is giving between distinguishing between his hand, which is in a different rishus, versus when his hand is in the same rishus. That it depends whether again. Yeah. So not so much the distinction that Rashi makes whether his hand is on the ground or not, but whether his hand is in the same resource as his body or not. In the case of Reuven and Shimon, it is. In the case of the Oni and the Osher, it's not. Okay. Rav Chiya l'Rav. So in this connection, so after Rav had asked the question to Rebbe and gotten the answer, Rav Chiya said to Rav, Bar Pachsi, son of great people, we have this expression in Brachas, Pachas means like a governor. So and he calls Rav Bar Pachsi, descendant of great people, of great Talmud Chachamim, great leaders. Rav and Rav Chiya were both descended from Malchus Beis Dovid. So that was a nickname that Rav Chiya had for Rav. Loi Amina Lacha, haven't I told you previously?
We
had that in Brachas. Yeah. Right. Haven't I told you? Ki koy Rebbe Bahama Sechta, when Rebbe is right now teaching a different, a particular Masechta, Loi Tishayla, the Masechta Achriki. You should not be asking him questions that are relevant to a different Masechta. In this case, when Rav asked the question, it was a question in Shabbos, but Rebbe at that time was teaching a different Masechta. So Rav Chiya tells Rav, you shouldn't have done that. Dilma Lava Daite, because he may not be able to have it in mind right now. If not for the fact that Rebbe is such a great Talmud Chacham, you could have embarrassed him. The Mishani Loch Shinuyah, the Loch Shinuyah. He could have mistakenly given you a wrong answer, because right now his mind is not in Hilchos Shabbos. Right now his mind is in some other halacha. Kasafte means you would have embarrassed him.
It's Aramaic.
You have the word kisufa, for example, nama de kisufa, a bread of shame. So yeah, kisufa means embarrassment. Yeah. So
kisufa is in Hebrew.
Well, in general it's an Aramaic. In Hebrew you would say busha, klima, cherpa, whatever. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so like this, you shouldn't have asked Rebbe at this time because he might have given you a wrong answer. Okay, in this case, Rav Chiya is saying the fact is the answer that Rebbe gave you was indeed the correct answer. D'tanya, in fact, we learn in a brisa, a related case. Suppose that a person is carrying food and drink from before Shabbat, which is similar now to the case where somebody put it in his hand after Shabbat began, because either way, he himself did not, in the first case, the case that Rav asked about, Reuven didn't, on the face of it, maybe didn't do the Akira. Shimon, rather, didn't do the Akira, Reuven did by putting it in his hand. In the case where he did it, b'moidyoim, there's not an Akira that's relevant to him for Shabbos, because the Akira took place before Shabbos. And, if then, after Shabbos begins, he goes outside, chayev, then he's chayev, achatos, because not like the case of his hand in the Mishnah, because again, once he starts moving his body, akiras gufei ka akiras tekes, once he starts moving his body, it's the equivalent of doing akira on the object. Tosfos points out, it has to be, you can have a case where a person is carrying something before Shabbos, and then he stopped in order to adjust the load. That's not considered stopping. The fact that he stops in order to adjust it on his back or whatever is not considered stopping. Stopping in order to take a break, that would be considered stopping. So then what happens is, now he starts moving again, now he's doing Akiras Gufay, and now he's Chayav. If he were to have just been continuously walking from before Shabbos began, then indeed there's no Akira. You can't say every step he takes is an Akira. It doesn't work that way, and therefore, actually, we're going to discuss that point later on Daf Vav. We're going to get back to that point, but
stopping and starting again,
that would be when he does that. Then he's doing an Akira. But if it's a rest, but if he had not stopped at all, if he had only stopped in order to adjust the load, that wouldn't be considered stopping, and then in fact there's no akira. Okay. Yeah. Amar Abaye. So Abaye says in this connection, particularly, now it's obvious to me as follows. There's no question, Abaye says, based on our Mishnah, if you're sticking your hand into a different reshus, your hand does not completely count like the reshus that your hand does not completely count like the reshus that you were in. We know that. We see on the basis of the case of the Oni. The Oni is standing in Rishos Harabim. He has his hand stuck out into Rishos HaYachid. If you were to say that his hand is considered part of Rishos Harabim, then we said if the Balabas takes something out of his hand, then he's Potter. If his hand was considered Rishos Harabim, the Balabas would be Chayev for taking something from Rishos Harabim into Rishos HaYachid. So you can see from that that his hand is not considered to be part of Rishos Harabim.
Because
even though he's standing in Rishos Harabim, the fact that his hand is sticking into a different Rishos means that it's not completely part of Rishos Harabim. And on the other hand, it's not like Rishos HaYachid, we see from the opposite case of the Balabais, where the Balabais sticks his hand out the window, and the Oni takes something from it. Again, if we said that the hand follows the body, then we would say that the Balabas's hand would be considered Rishos HaYachid, and if it's Rishos HaYachid, when the Oni takes something from it and puts it down in the street, he did Akira and Hanocha. The fact that we're saying that not means it's not considered, means that it's not, yeah. However, Abaye asks the question, Yodishal Otem Maushe Ta'ofet Karmelis. Now, we have Midaraisa, so there's really only three things. There's Rishos Harabim, there's Rishos HaYachid, and then there's Mokim Patur. There's areas where you're higher than 10 Tvachim in Rishos Harabim is one of them. There's a number of other cases that we'll learn as we go through. Mokim Patur is a place from which you're allowed to transfer objects between Mokim Patur and Rishos HaYachid or Rishos Harabim on Shabbos. The Chachamim took some Mokim Paturs and turned them into a concept called Karmelis. We're going to have examples throughout the sugya over here. We're going to have examples later on in the Masechta. But the one example is, let's say you have, in the middle of Rishos HaRabim, let's say you have a mound of dirt. Now, if that mound is 10 tefachim tall and 4 by 4 tefachim, then it counts as a Rishos HaYachid. But if it's less than 10 tall, then it counts as a Karmelis.
Or if it's 10 tall, but that's not wide.
If it's 10 tall, but not wide enough, then it's Mokim Patur. But if it's wide enough, but it's not 10, then it's considered time. So midaraisa would have been a mokum patur, and you'd be allowed to take something that was on that heap of dirt and put it in the street or vice versa. Midrabanan, we make it a karmelis and say you're not allowed to do that. What is the derivation of the word karmelis? By the way, Rashi mentions over here that there's a word in Lashon Kodesh, karmilo, yare the karmilo, which means his forest or his woods. So a karmelis is a place like woods, like a forest, for example, which is neither Rishos HaYachid nor Rishos HaRabim. So the Chum gave it an intermediate status. Tosfos later on discusses another possibility that karmelis comes from the word caramel means fresh toasted grain, and it's like no fresh grain actually before it's toasted. And caramel over there stands for rach mal. It's soft but hard. So it's like halfway in between. So the same way karmelis is halfway between Rishos HaRabim and Rishos HaYachid. The Rambam gives another explanation that karmelis is like ke-armelis, meaning like an almana. Armelis is Aramaic word for a widow. So a widow is neither here nor there. She's not an unmarried girl. She's not a married woman. So the same way, a karmelis is like neither here nor there.
She's not married.
Well, okay, but she's not married, but she's not a besula. She's not a never married girl either. She's an in-between status, and the same way a karmelis is something in-between. Anyway, the point is, again, the Chachamim took certain mokum patures and turned them into a definition called karmelis. So Abaye is saying like, obviously from our Mishnah we see that the hand of the Oni or the hand of the Balabayas is not considered Rishos HaYachid or Rishos HaRabim, so at least on a Daraisa level it's considered Mokum Tur. The question is, did the Chachamim make it that it should be like a timeless? Now, that's not relevant as far as the question of whether anybody is Chayav Chafas or not, because you can't be Chayav Chafas for an Issur D'Rabbanan. But the question is, Mi Kansur Rabbanan La'aduri La'gabei Eloi. Let's say you have a case like this. Imagine a person stuck his hand out into a different Rishos. So let's say a person is standing in Rishos HaYachid and sticks his hand out through the window into Rishos HaRabim, holding something. Holding something, he can't stick his hand out of 4 amos if his hands aren't long enough, unless he's Vatya. But no, he's in one Rishos. He's in Rishos HaYachid. He has something in his hand. He reaches out the window holding something in his hand out into Rishos HaRabim. Do we cancel him, given that he started an Isser, la'aduri l'gabei, and not allow him to bring his hand back in, or not? So if we say his hand is considered a makom patur, then we're not going to count to him. If we're going to say that it's considered a karmelist, then it means the chachamim are penalizing him because he started with an iser. He has to keep his hand out there for the rest of Shabbos.
So we didn't say, according to this, we don't hold that the hand is considered makom patur. And
the fact that it's makom chashuv, we're going to get to later on. We're going to get to the point about later on, we're going to get to the fact about his hand being considered a makom chashuv. But
right
now we're saying the hand is definitely not Rishus HaRabim or Rishus HaYachid, because we see from our Mishnah that it's not. But the question is it, does it remain a makom patur, or does it become a karmelis? And if it becomes a karmelis, then midrabanan, he's not allowed. Then he's not allowed to take it back in, right? Toshma. We learn in a braisa. Suppose a person's hand is full of produce, and he stuck his hand out of the window, full of fruit. One braisa says he's not allowed to bring his hand back in. One says he's mutter. So, shouldn't we assume that that is the point of their machlokes? This question, whether his hand is a karmelist. The marsav a karmelist damya or marsav a lav a karmelist damya. The first braisa that says that he's also lachzira would hold that his hand is a karmelist.
No.
Which means that's a karmelist. Well, midraisa would have been a machlokes mature. Midrabanan is a karmelist. One holds karmelis, therefore he's not allowed to bring it back in. Just like midrabanan, you're not allowed to transfer something from karmelis to rishus hayachid. The same way here, his hand is a karmelis, so his hand is now the items in his hand are now in a karmelis, and he can't move them back to rishus hayachid.
And the other one holds what?
And the other one would hold that it's not. The other one would hold that it's a makom patur.
He was over on an issur
d'rabanan. That's the question. He was over on an Issur D'Rabbanan, but now the question is, do the D'Rabbanan prevent him from now doing another Issur D'Rabbanan?
Yeah.
Or do we say that not? Do we say that his hand is a makom patur, and therefore maybe he did something wrong by putting it out in the first place, by starting with an Issur, because after all, if he had dropped that fruit into Rishus HaRabim, he would have been doing an Issur D'Oraisa. So maybe, in fact, Tosfos discusses over here, it may not even necessarily depend on the question of whether it's karmelist or not. It may be just a knack, maybe, in fact, Rashi also says later in the Sugya, that it might actually be, we might actually say it's not a karmelist, and nevertheless we penalize it. That's possible because even if we don't formally consider it a karmelist, the rabbanon still have the right to cast him for doing something wrong. Okay. So if we would be able to retrieve it, according to the second braisa, according to the first braisa, not. So that would be the answer. The answer is it a karmelist or not? It's a machlokes tanoim. The answer is the Gemara says, not necessarily. Everybody might hold, both braises might hold that his hand is considered by karmelist. The point would be, is his hand within 10 tfachim of the ground, or is it not? If it's above 10 tfachim of the ground, then it's already in a makom patur, because above 10 tfachim in Rishus HaRabim is makom patur. And the Chachamim did not change that and make that a karmelist. So if his hand is above 10 tefachim, then fine. He's reaching out into makom patur. Therefore, he can bring his hand back in, as opposed to if his hand is within 10 tefachim of the ground, then it should be considered a karmelist.
There's a problem with that.
What's that?
Is that you don't, there's no chiddush in that.
What do you mean there's no chiddush in it? In fact, there is a great big chiddush because Tosfos actually asked the question. So let's say he put his hand, So, Tosfos brings up the point. What if he put his hand below 10 tefachim? So why would he say he can't bring it back in? All he has to do is move his hand up to 10 tefachim, and then it's in makom patur, and then he should be able to bring it back in.
Where's he going from?
So he's going from inside the house. So he stuck his hand out the window, let's say. He started sticking out his hand. Let's say he stuck out his hand below 10 tefachim. We're saying now at this point in the Gemara that his hand's considered like karmelis. And we're saying therefore he can't bring it back in. But why shouldn't we say, okay, let him lift up his hand till above 10 tefachim. Now he's in makom patur. Good. Now he should be able to bring it back in. Tosfos, in fact, says he would be allowed to do that.
But he's changing his shoes.
That's fine. He's changing to makom patur. Makom patur, you're allowed to change.
You're allowed from karmelis.
You're allowed from karmelis to makom patur. Yes. Makom patur remains makom patur. The Chachamim did not put any more rules on that yet. So Tosfos, in fact, learns that yes. The Rashba disagrees and says that no. If he put out his hand at this point, we're saying in the Gemara, if he put it out above 10 tefachim, fine, he could return it. But if he put it below 10 tefachim, we don't want him even to pick it up above 10 and then bring it back in, because then he's not allowed to do that, because then he may bring it back below 10 tefachim. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings like the Rashba, the Alter Rebbe, in particular, Paskins, the Alter Rebbe, in Shulchan Aruch, Paskins like the Rashba in that. So if he stuck out his hand into the other Rishus, even though if he stuck out his hand into the other rishus below 10 tefachim, then he's not allowed to bring it back in. Well, I mean, we're not finished the Gemara yet. We have a few different other considerations and details. But wait, okay. So that's another way of understanding it. So they would both agree that his hand is kaimelus, but the question is whether it was above or below 10 tefachim. The iboy same idi v'idi l'matamastara. Another possibility, both braises could be talking about below 10 tefachim, the lav kaimelus damya. We could even say that neither braisa holds that his hand is a kaimelus. That it should, so they would both agree his hand is makom ptur. But we could say there's no contradiction because one braisa is talking about we stuck out his hand before Shabbos. So then, fine, let him bring it back after Shabbos. What's the problem? He didn't do any iser sticking out his hand before Shabbos, as opposed to when he put out his hand after Shkia. Then he already did something that was osur, and therefore the Chacham would penalize him and not allow him to bring it back in. So again, even if we say his hand is not a kaimelus, so it's not even a matter of transferring something from a kaimelus to Rishos HaYachid, but nevertheless the Chacham are going to penalize him for starting to do something wrong, for sticking out his hand with his food in it, where if he were to drop it in Rishos HaYachid, he would have done an Isser Dara. From Shkiyas Chacham onward.
But he's allowed to bring it back.
Then he would be allowed to bring it back. Mishen Hashecha is what the Gemara is saying. So that's the Gemara spells out. We're going to say it like this. If he stuck out his hand while it was Ba'od Yom, then the Chacham are not going to penalize him because he didn't do anything wrong by sticking it out to begin with. Mishen Hashecha, Kansur Rabbanon. But if he stuck out his hand after Shabbos began, then we're saying that the Chacham are going to penalize him. However,
bringing the hand into the work?
After. Now, so again, according to Tosfos, he could bring his hand the Ma'ala Ma'asara, and he's good according to the Rashba. Okay. So the question is, Adraba Ifcha Mistabra, what do you mean? We should argue the other way around. Miba Oid Yoim, think of like this. If he put out his hand with the Peiros in it, Miba Oid Yoim, the Ish Shadi Lay, where even if after Shabbos begins, he drops the fruit, Loy Osi Videi Chiyu Kapas, he's not going to come to a Chiyu Kapas because there was Anocha without Akira. So there's no way that having stuck out his hand before Shabbos that he could ever come to an Isser D'Oraisa. That's the point. The Akira was the Oyoyim when it doesn't count as far as Shabbos. Yeah. So therefore we should say Adraba, that in that case, Liknas Suor Rabbanan. In that case, let the Chachamim penalize him. Tell him, don't bring your hand back in. Don't bring your hand back in, because the worst that can happen is that he's going to say, okay, you know what, I can't keep my hand out there for the rest of Shabbos, I'm going to drop it. Okay, but he didn't commit an Isser D'Oraisa by doing that.
How long
doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. But if he stuck out his hand after it got dark, after Shabbos began, now let's consider, eventually he might drop it. He might say, I can't stand here for the next 25 hours with my hand out the window. I'm going to have to drop it. And then he's going to come to a Chiyuv Chatas because he did the Akira and the Hanocha on Shabbos. We should say that in that case, the Chachamim should not count for him. Allow him to bring his hand back in order to avoid doing an Isser D'Oraisa. Why don't we say that? Listen. If he stuck out his hand before Shabbos,
right.
We tell him, sorry, you have to keep your hand out the whole Shabbos, one of two things is going to happen. Either he's going to keep his hand out there, and then fine, no Isser has been done at all, or he's going to end up dropping it, but then an Isser Zerabaran has been done, because it was a Hanocha without an Akira, but no Isser Zeraisa, because there was no Akira and Hanocha on Shabbos. So therefore, the Chacham should tell him, keep your hand out, because the worst that can happen is you're going to be Oivan and Isser D'Rabbanan. But if he stuck out his hand to begin with, after Shabbos began, what are the possibilities? Either he's going to keep his hand out, and then fine, he's okay, or he's going to drop it, and then he's going to be Oivan and Isser D'Oraisa, because he did Akedah Anocha. Shouldn't we be saying it's the second case, where we don't penalize him, to avoid the possibility of him doing an Isser D'Oraisa? Which then he got, yes. And since the Chachmei HaYeshiva did not choose to give that answer, Tifshet did Abibi Bar Abaya. We should be able to answer the question that Abibi Bar Abaya asked. The boy Abibi Bar Abaya, Hidbik passed the Tamar. Suppose a person, after Shabbos began, Beshoigig put bread in the oven to bake. Now, if it bakes, then he's going to be Chayav HaChatos because the Malacha Loita. Taking it out of the oven is not considered a malacha. Radia hapas, taking the bread out of the oven is not considered a malacha. After Shkia, he put bread in the oven, mistaken. Now the question is, are we going to allow him? That's the question. Did the Chachamim allow him to take it out of the oven before he comes to a chiyuv chatas or not. If he leaves it there and it bakes, he's going to end up being chayav chatas because he put it in the oven and it bakes and he did the malacha of oifah. If he takes it out, he won't have done the malacha. He'll be potter from chatas. At Rudiyat Apas in and of itself is not a malacha. The Gemara talks about it's chachma v'ein a malacha. It's a chachma, it's a skill to do it. It's not considered a malacha. So it's also d'rabbanan. It's also d'rabbanan to take bread out of the oven on Shabbos. But d'raisa, it wouldn't be also. So do the chachamim allow him to take the bread out, in this case, while it's still dough, before it gets baked, or not? Well then, so tifshit the lohi tiru. So based on this thing that we just said, as far as his hand sticking out, the answer should be that we don't. Just like in the case of the hand sticking out, we're saying that we don't, even if he put it in the hand out after Shabbos began, we're not going to allow him. We're going to penalize him. He has to keep his hand out there the whole Shabbos. And if that means he drops the fruit, and therefore he's chayim chatas, tough luck. We're not gonna allow him to bring it back in. The same thing, that would be the answer to Rabbi Barabai's question. You put the bread in the oven. Now you want to take it out before you come to a chiyuv chatas. Tough luck. We're not gonna allow you to be over on an issur d'rabbanan for that. The fact
you're saying that if the rabbanim say that, then they're encouraging him to do an issur d'oraisa. They're saying an issur d'rabbanan is less.
Well, what they're saying is you started by doing something wrong. You started by doing something wrong. Therefore, we're not going to be matir you two. Therefore, we're not going to be matir you. We're going to discuss that more. We're going to discuss that more tomorrow in the Gemara Beis Hashem. But let's meanwhile work with what we have. The question is, again, Rabbi Barabai has this question. Given that we're saying now, given that they answered the two brises by saying that if he put his hand out, mishicha shecha, then the Rabbanan come to him and prevent him from bringing back in his hand, even though that conceivably might bring him to a chiyuv chatas if he drops the fruit, then that answers Rabbi Barabai's question. The answer is, oh, like Kasha the Tifshit. Okay, not a problem. Fine, yes, you could answer it. You could say, yes, Rabbi had the question. We can answer, yes, the Chachmei Yeshiva thereby implicitly answered it with their answer to the two brises before. So no problem.
That's it.
So yes, we have the answer. The answer is he's stuck. He can't take the bread out of the oven. The Ibayis Ema, or another possibility, La'olam Lo Tifshei, not necessarily could you answer a Bibi Barabai's question on the basis of this discussion over here, because V'lo Kasha, Kan B'Shogeg, Kan B'Mazid. Because you could make another distinction in the two brises, where he said whether he's allowed to bring his hand back in, whether he put his hand out to begin with B'Shogeg or B'Mazid. B'Shogeg le'kansur Rabbanon, B'Mazid kansur Rabbanon. If he did it B'Shogeg, then the Rabbanon are not going to cancel him and prevent him from bringing back his hand. If he did it B'Mazid, then they are. So that's not relevant to Rabbibi's, that's not relevant to Rabbibi Barabai's question, because in that case, it's not that we're not, Rashi explains, we can't answer Rabbibi's question either way. We can say, we didn't cancel him if he did it B'Shogeg, not because we want to make sure he doesn't end up being over on an Issur D'oraisa by dropping it, but because the fact is, he didn't do something amazing, and therefore, and it would only be a knas for him to bring back in his hand, because again, we said his hand is not really Rosh HaYachid or Rosh HaRabim, and therefore we're not going to penalize him. Rediyas Apas, though, Rashi points out, is different. That's an actual shvus. That is an actual zera derabanan that was formally made by the Chachamim. Don't take bread out of the oven on Shabbos. And in this case of not bringing back in his hand, would be the question is, should we Chachamim, of the times of the Gemara, is it appropriate for us to cancel him? But over here, Rediyas Apas is something that the Chachamim of previous generations made in a full vote of the Sanhedrin or whatever, that this is usur, and therefore we can't so easily override it.
Are you talking about dough that was made into challah?
Doesn't matter. He put dough in the oven. He put dough in the oven to bake.
What's the
difference? The dough, that's the difference. Malacha losh. We're talking about he put it in the oven to bake. What's the difference? Whether it was shaped into a challah or not, I don't understand.
It was already a challah. No. I see people warming challah.
We're not talking about warming up. We're talking about baking it.
We're not talking about baking it.
Yeah, yeah. So we're talking about dough. It was dough when he put it in. Yeah. So you can't answer a Bibi Barabai's question necessarily, because after all, yes, the Chachmei Yeshiva came up with an answer that would bear on his, but on the other hand, it could be Shogeg versus Mazid, and if we say that it is, then it doesn't bear on his question. The boy is saying Aidi v'Aidi b'Shogeg. Another possibility is both cases are talking Shogeg. The Hocha becomes Shogeg after Mazid Kamistagi. But we could say the argument between the two brises is, if he did it for Shogeg, do we penalize him as if he did it for Mazid, because it could easily be confused with the Mazid? Sometimes we say that even though somebody did something for Shogeg, okay, he did it for Shogeg, very nice, but if we allow him to undo it, or we allow him to do something differently, then what's going to happen? Every Mazid is going to say, I was Shogeg. It's not going to be obvious to people because people don't know what he's thinking. So do we do that? Do we say if he put out his hands b'shogeg, we're not going to allow him because later on he or somebody else may do the same thing but may did and claim I was shogeg, and therefore the chum just closed off the whole thing, or not? It would be machlokes. Do we say that we can't say him if he did it b'shogeg because it would be confused with the mazid or not? If we say yes,
two reasons not.
So one reason, so far we have a few different possibilities. It could be they're arguing whether his hand is timeless or not, but it could also be that it's Lamailo or Lamasa Masara. It could also be that it's whether he stuck out his hand before Shabbos or on Shabbos, and it could also be whether it was B'shogeg or Mamezid. And now the fifth answer is that it's not, in both cases, talking about B'shogeg, but the B'raisas argue, given that he did it B'shogeg, do we penalize him anyway in order to prevent people from doing the same thing to Mamezid? Okay, we'll continue the discussion tomorrow, Esther.